Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom at voicesofmontana.com.
That's a heavy
troubles over
that's
there,
a heavy lift. That's the agenda for the House today. I'm looking at it. They got going at 8 o'clock. It's heavy. Okay. It's our Dem Power Hour. It's a capital recap. Jonathan Carlin's going to be with us, Minority Whip out of Missoula County, and they're already in session on the floor, Committee of the Whole, so to speak. So there's business going on. It'd be kind of abbreviated because of that heavy lift in the House, and boy, that's been going on for a few days now. We have that today. Let's head over there to the Capitol right now, our Capitol Recap, Dem Power Hour, and Minority Whip Jonathan Carlin joins us again, House District 98. Busy day, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tom? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and spending a few minutes here. I know there's votes going on, so you may have to excuse yourself. That's fine. That's great. I appreciate that and making a little bit of time here, too. Talk about the atmosphere the past couple of days. You had House Bill 2, and that's an all-day session as well. And that pretty much got over the finish line, still, in the House. Still a lot of work to do on that. But what's going on?
Yeah, you know, it's been a packed week in the House. As you mentioned, we had the state budget bill, House Bill 2. So we were on the House floor all day voting on amendments, eventually voting on the budget. I voted for the budget. The budget passed. We had some Democrats support, some Democrats against, and some Republicans support, and some Republicans against. So I think it's a pretty good in that we actually have neither party totally happy nor totally unhappy.
Yeah, and I looked at some of that action, of course, all day stuff, and there's a lot of explanation going on. I think 29 amendments were attempted. Only 6 were successful in that regard. What about overall spending in this budget? I know Jonathan's a Democrat. It's the Dem Power Hour here for the Capitol Recap. We alternate, in case you're just joining us, Republicans and Democrats the week in and week out on Fridays, usually. You'll give us that sense of the budget, Jonathan, from your perspective.
You know, so like I said, I voted for the budget. I think that overall, broadly, I think the budget does an adequate job of funding our essential services, investing in funding our schools. I will say, I think that there are things that, you know, we could be doing more when it comes to, you know, building back our behavioral health system. We could be doing more in Department of Health and Human Services when it comes to supporting kids. But again, overall, I think that the budget does a good job of funding state government so that it serves all Montana.
Yeah, it's always I don't want to say easy, but, you know, it is sort of easy to say we could do more. I think a lot of people say, oh, we could always do more. But that's the process of our governance is.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about a bill that you had brought and we had talked about here on this program. I thought it had some merit, House Bill 154, in terms of It was a property tax relief bill that was tied to your ability to pay. So there would be an income tax credit based on a formula of how much actual property tax that you have compared to your income. It was a kind of a unique solution. It did pass the House. It was like maybe 60-40 or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Went to Senate taxation. A lot of bills have been killed this week in Senate taxation. But talk about 154. And I noted that actually, you know, even Democrats had voted that one down. I thought that indicated that the idea was still alive out there in some of those bills. And that's what's happening an awful lot in Senate taxation, finance and claims, too, I think.
Yeah, so on a broad picture here when it comes to property taxes, I'm of the belief that we need real structural reform to our property tax system, and that means changing tax rates. We've got a bill for that that's going to be heard in Senate tax tomorrow. That's House Bill 155. The governor and Lou Jones has another bill that was also tabled in Senate tax, and that's a bill that we've amended to continuing trying to lower the rate for the middle class. On top of that, what the bill you mentioned, 154, bill I have, also includes an ability to pay component. It links income tax. So the idea is let's lower taxes for the middle class, and then let's also make sure that nobody is going to be priced out of their home. Senate tax tabled both the governor's bill and they tabled my bill, and they're hearing Mark Thain's bill, so another rate reduction bill today. And at the same time, in House tax, a committee I sit on, we tabled a rebate bill because my feeling is we shouldn't be doing even talking about rebates until we make structural reforms to our property tax system. So I don't want to say we're at an impasse, but I think that we're going to need both House and Senate to have some real serious conversations in the next few days and then the next week to come to some consensus on what the end game is.
What do you mean by structural reform? Because that can mean different things to a lot of people. Yeah. Overall. And you know, we have said we need to have a grown-up conversation about taxes in Montana. Our tax structure, anybody really ready to do that? What's your take on what structural reform would be?
So at the basic level, that means that we need to reduce the rate that most Montanans are paying. Right now, what's happened is that since people's home values have soared in many parts of the state, but the rate has remained the same, people are paying a lot more. And so what we can do, both what we propose, so, you know, the Democrats have a bill that's gotten strong bipartisan support and Republicans have a bill. Both of those, in different ways, reduce the tax rate that most Montanans are paying. And so that's, I think, you know, and then what we do is create a tiered rate system so that, you know, if you've got a multi-million-dollar house on the river, you're going to pay a higher rate than, you know, an average home. And so what I'm really talking about here is reducing the tax rate that most Montanans pay.
I can appreciate that, too, and I know there's bills out there to do that. It's good to hear there's some bipartisan support for that. Of course, you know, the devil's in the details. You know, when I think of structural reform, I think about a conversation about do we have income tax? What about the sales tax? What about a flat tax? What do we really do with property taxes? Do we have to separate you know, the school funding formula from the property tax formula, because that's the one that kind of gets it caught up, makes it overly complicated when it comes to relief. So that's in my mind. Is there an appetite for that, Representative?
You know, I think in some ways there is. And I'll give an example. Actually, the bill that I'll have in a few minutes up on the House floor, like, that's a bill that would provide state funding for special education pre-K. Now, a lot of listeners might think, well, how does that have anything to do with property taxes? Well, if we're not providing state funding, then those school districts have to rely entirely on the local tax base to fund what's an essential mandated service. And so what we're seeing are some bills, from school transportation to the bills I have, that say, let's try to, you know, the state has strong revenue. Let's try to reduce the burden that districts have to pay on local property taxpayers and have the state pay a little bit more of their share. So there are bills that do that, and that will make a difference in people's property tax bills if we can pass those. When it comes to you know, sales tax, income tax, I don't think that we need – I mean, I'm of the belief we don't need a sales tax. You know, we have strong state revenue, and if we make changes like a homestead exemption, so changes to the rates, I mean, we can solve this problem. And when it comes to income tax, we're seeing lots of income tax bills. But, you know, that when I do the math on those, what will save my constituents the most money is cutting their property tax rate and giving them a tax credit.
And you know, I appreciate that. That for me is an argument for an overall discussion about our tax system, because you're right. You know, there's different approaches to try and accommodate for some tax relief that don't necessarily, I think they complicate things. I think the more you pile on to a system, it gets more and more complicated. So, but, you know, like you said, we've got good revenues and we're walking through this. And I'm not in favor of a sales tax by any means either, but I think it's overdue to have this full-on discussion. Or maybe, and I think it's happening now too. I mean, yeah. So what do you see? I mean, what's the likelihood of all these bills and proposals out there, both House and Senate, some alive, some dead, but all those principles are still, the ideas are still floating around out there. What's the likelihood we get something that nobody likes?
You know, just because a bill is tabled, that can still be pulled off the table. That happens all the time. Bills can also be blasted out of committee. And so I would say procedurally, you know, nothing is dead until we're all leaving Helena in the end of April or May. I think that there are enough legislators that want a real meaningful fix. I think that what we need to fight, and I think there's interest in both sides in fighting this, is some type of a rebate Band-Aid on the system. Because I think that while to some, that's sort of an easy solution where, you know, nobody gets mad in terms of there's a lot of lobbyists up here that, you know, if you're reducing property taxes for homeowners, some of that burden gets shifted. So I think that there are some that say, well, rather than even have that conversation, let's just do another rebate. And I think that what we need to do is say, you know, we need to focus on, you know, reducing tax rates, providing a tax credit to keep people whole. And I think we've got a good chance of that. I think folks need to keep contacting their legislators also and say, you know, we want a real fix, not just a rebate.
What's big on the floor today? I'm going to let you go here in just about a minute or so because I know that activity is going on. I appreciate the time. And I think Senator Cora Newman's going to join us here too. So, a bit later on. So, what's big on, you know, like I said, I've looked at that, whatever it is, 5-page agenda today. What's big?
Gosh, you know, we are literally tackling issues of every issue you could possibly imagine. And so I have to look at what is on the rest of the agenda today. But, I mean, we've got stuff on literally every topic. We've got judges. I mean, it's, I'd say, really across the board. One thing that we have seen is that a lot of the partisan judicial bills have been getting killed. We still have more to go. But I would say over the next couple weeks, one thing folks should watch is we're going to keep seeing a couple more of these bills that are going to try to make judges partisan. And so we're going to continue fighting that. Again, in terms of the floor agenda today, I actually have to take a look. I've been so focused on prepping for my bill that I need to see what else is going on.
Right. Yeah. Well, none of it happens in a capsule because you guys are always talking and always, always working. And I really appreciate that. Hey, Representative Carlin again, House District 98, Missoula County. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for your public service as well. And I'll let you go and get back at to it and look forward to chatting with you down the road, sir.
Thanks so much for having me, Tom. Good to
be
on.
Yep, thank you, sir. Continuing our Capitol recap, it's the Dem Power Hour version. And Senator Cora Newman now joins us out of Senate District 30. That's the Bozeman area. And it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance, Senator. Thank you for being on. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. We're busy.
Yeah, I noticed. and of course, you know, you've got less than 30 days. I suppose the countdown's now at 25 or 24 or something like that to get some work done. So, yeah, it gets busy and bumpy from here, doesn't it?
I think so. This is my first session, but boy, it's been a ride.
Oh, my gosh.
And I know that it speeds up as we get closer. So I think we're starting to feel it.
It's been bumpy in the Senate. We've covered an awful lot of that here. I don't think that I'll get your impressions on that. I want to move over to, you know, who you are. You know, tell us who Senator Cora Newman is and your background and why you picked up this mantle of public service.
Oh, great. Thank you. So I grew up in Bozeman when it was still, you know, a cow town.
Right. Yeah.
So I've watched it evolve. We have four generations there. And I was raised by a construction worker and a homemaker, and we've just had, you know, I had a really wonderful childhood. I work in rural health and public health because when I was a baby, my dad died in a lumber mill accident. So we'd been closer to good care, he may have survived. And so I just,
wow,
I've been really moved to make sure that our rural areas, I always say, just because you live in a rural area doesn't mean you shouldn't have access to top quality services. And so I work with rural communities, tribal communities. I did go out and work, you know, nationally and internationally for a little while before coming home. And I was moved to pick up the mantle of public service, really, because I got a ton of encouragement, like just over and over and over for a couple of years. And I was finally like, okay, I guess there's something about me where people think I should run for office. So I was very resistant, but I do think I have the kind of nature of a public servant or somebody who's, you know, drawn to the kind of call of duty, so to speak. So I really do like to serve and put myself to good use.
Well, that's what I appreciate when people genuinely have that servant's heart. And I think you can see it. I think you can tell right away. And I think also, like I've said, I've spent a lot of time watching the legislature, you know, as we do reports on it as well. And have appreciated your presence on the Senate floor, too, and I think the rest of the body would feel the same.
Thank you.
Yeah, and what a story. I did not know that about your father. And it nails home a point about our frontier care in this country and the need to shore that up. And I think people have recognized that over the years. But, getting to the point where that wouldn't have happened, I don't think we're there yet.
Right. I know. It's a struggle. One thing I'm very proud of with Montana, and I do think, as you all saw, I'm sure Medicaid expansion was renewed. And I think that was a tough one for a lot of people, obviously, because yeah. I know these services can be contentious. But I think at the end of the day, the reason there was pretty overwhelming support for it is because we all really do value our critical access hospitals and our access to care across the state. And I don't think there's a single senator or representative in the Senate that doesn't have constituents that do rely on those services. So even though, Medicaid does support those who are lower income, because of Medicaid, all of these hospitals can stay open. So it actually really helps everyone, not just lower income Montanans. And so that I was really proud to see that. I worked really hard on that. It was, the number one priority for Democrats. So I'm glad that we've been able to work together on that, especially when we see so much division everywhere else, it seems.
Well, and this is, it was a financial consideration for a lot of people and also a philosophical one, too. And we've kind of had that discussion here. And I understand the financial situation that a lot of people find themselves in. And so I probably was in favor of the reauthorization, but I also completely, especially at this time, but I also completely understand that if we are driving, these services to the government, so to speak, I think we lose choice. And I think we lose things that we do value in our healthcare. You're experienced in this field too. Where do you see it going? I mean, do you see us just more and more into socialized healthcare, or are we going to find a balance that makes it more affordable and we can still maintain that high quality?
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally very dedicated to finding a balance because I do. I think that we have. Our healthcare system is definitely broken, right? Mm-hmm. We have challenges with, prescription drug prices, with, hospital charges. There's a lot of ways that we have to look at and really continue to move forward on making healthcare more affordable, regardless of the government, I think. And I do think the government can also negotiate some of this, so we need to press the government to do more of that, because we have a lot of leverage to negotiate prices and things like that. But we also have the opportunity for innovation. there is a lot, like with telehealth, with, different technology that's developing that can actually help deliver. I don't want to replace humans, but in places where you just don't have the people to provide services, we are in the middle of a, technological revolution, and there's no reason we can't bring more of those services forward to help reduce costs and to make healthcare more sustainable. So I did a couple of years at a tech company actually when I was out in the world, and I learned a lot about how to build a system that is sustainable and generates revenue and is not dependent on any kind of social service. And so I think Montanans are very innovative. I think because we've always been so, I remember growing up, I felt like we were, could not have been more far removed from Washington or anything like that. So we're used to being kind of more isolated. And I think that that's made us creative and innovative. And I think if we can keep moving that forward on things like healthcare and not, continue to invest in innovation, I think we're actually going to find some really great solutions to complement.
I encourage you in that. I believe in that as well. Yeah. And I think it's because of the nature of how we grew up in Montana. I know things are, well, you said this on the floor earlier this week in the debate about the movie tax credit increases. Montana is changing. And that's hard, I think, for like, you grew up here, I grew up here. I want to ask this question, though, because I had this opportunity with you. Where does, and I hope it's not out of order, but where does insurance come into play when it comes to revamping and right-sizing? And like you say, our healthcare system is in crisis. What kind of role, what's your thought on insurance? Is it helping? Is it hindering?
I mean, I think the thing that I've been most focused on is actually pharmaceutical drug prices, because I think, and just medical supply prices, I think that that's a place where prices get really, really inflated and drive up the costs in a way. Like, I'm one of the reasons I focus on that is because as a government official and as a government, we can negotiate that. So I actually think that that's, if we were going to put our energy into something, it would be actually in negotiating with pharmaceutical companies and drug prices. And yeah, there's definitely, I don't have specific solutions on insurance right now, but I think that, that's one of the main sources of that's driving, you know, these really exorbitant costs, right? They get passed on ultimately to the hospitals and the patients.
Let me tell you an experience I had, and I've shared that here too. I'll try to summarize it. I'm running out of time in this segment. Speaking with a medical professional from the University of Nebraska, and the circumstances aren't important here. But the thing is, he was saying, and this goes back maybe about 4 years, the thing that he was saying that this medical community needed was some reins on these lawsuits and some judicial reform in that regard. He said that that would make a huge difference for his providers in Nebraska. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I do think that that's really important. I think that we actually have, and I wish I had it with me in front of me, but we do have some proposals that we'll try to make sure that there are some limits on, you know, liability. We want to protect Montanans, right? We want to make sure that they have damages reimbursed if they go through something. There are a lot of mistakes that are made, right? And they can be sometimes completely life-altering or even deadly, but I do think that we have to rein in lawsuits kind of across the board. You know, I think in there's, you know, it happens in healthcare, but it also happens in other industries. And so we want to make sure we protect Montanans, but also, you know, keep some, you know, rein in some of these really exorbitant cases, because it creates a huge burden. And again, all those costs usually just get passed down to the consumer in the end.
I think there's good news, though, in that, you know, both sides of the aisle, maybe it's more conservatives, are beginning to understand that healthcare applied on the front end saves a ton of money on the back end. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things, so, you know, kind of like there's preventive care, right? So we got to make sure people stay healthy so they don't have to go into emergency and, you know, develop chronic disease, et cetera. The other thing, this is a little bit wonky, but I want to share that there's a new kind of trend in healthcare called value-based care. And it's basically value-based models where providers are rewarded for keeping people healthy and reducing avoidable costs. And so I do think that that's something, I know I've been talking to DPHHS about it. I think it's a growing trend. And I think it, you know, we do have to create incentives at the end of the day for people to change their behavior. And I think that value-based care model is kind of what you're speaking to, right?
Yep.
Let's keep people healthy and be rewarded for that. Because I think right now, a lot of times we're rewarded for treating people when they're sick, right? That model just is obviously, it costs so much more and it makes people less happy and less healthy.
Our guest here today for our Capitol Recap is Senator Cora Newman, Senate District 30. She's a first-time senator and public servant in the legislature out of Bozeman, Montana. I'm so curious, Cora, and it's Dr. Cora Newman. Thank you for your public service. I'm so curious about your experience and your impressions. You kind of talked to us earlier about what drove you to this point, but what actually it was more impactful about what drove you into public health care and service in that regard. What's your impression, though, as a first-time senator in the Senate, which is a pretty reserved body, but not always? And it's gone through a little bit of a ringer here this year, too. And I honestly think our Senate president has done a pretty good job in managing all through this.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because I keep hearing, you know, this is not normal. And I'm like, well, it's my first session. So for me, I don't know anything else. But I do think, what I've seen is I've seen two things. I've seen a lot of division, but I've also seen, you know, a lot of collaboration. And I do think that different groups of senators, Democrats and Republicans across the spectrum, there have been different kind of coalitions that have been coming together to vote on things that they agree on. So it's been interesting to see a lot of division, but then also some unexpected unity around, like I was talking about Medicaid expansion before, and there have been some other things that people have come together around. I mean, obviously, none of us none of us like what's happening. It doesn't feel good, right? We don't really want to be blaming. I don't like this, you know, blaming each other and investigating each other. And all of that just feels like we should be doing that. We're only here for 4 months. We need to be working every single day, and every single hour is so important. And the more we can put that stuff aside and just focus on property tax and childcare and healthcare and, you know, the things, housing, the things that are really hurting our communities right now, you know, the happier we'll all be. I always say, I've said this on the floor, and I've said to all my colleagues across the spectrum, you know, let's get into it. Let's debate. Let's come up with some great ideas. Let's be creative. Like, we have a really wonderful opportunity here to do some great work. Let's not fight, because, you know, we're not going to agree on a lot of things, but there are things we do all agree on. So it's been, I've been trying really hard to just build relationships across the board, because, you know, that's what it comes down to in the end. Do we understand each other? Can we hear each other? Can we find common ground? And I've definitely found some common ground on things that people wouldn't expect necessarily from a Democrat, you know. And I think, you know, that it's fun. I think it's fun to try to find that common ground.
Yeah, and I appreciate that as well. And if you love debate, that's what happens on the Senate floor. There's no cloture. And so I was surprised. I want to talk about childcare too, because that's sort of a, you know, public health service field. But I saw the debate not long ago. It was this week, about the proposal, and it was carried by Senator Greg Hertz. And we spoke with the industry members supporting this proposal as well. It was to add more money to this media act, or this, you know, movie credits, so to speak, $12 million annually. They wanted to bump that up to $30 million annually. They put a lot of restrictions on it, or some, to where that money was going to be directed to help more of Montana's smaller productions, hire more Montanans in that process as well. I'll have you talk about that. But almost everybody got up. I stopped counting, really, but everybody got up to speak on that bill. And I didn't see that as being one that would stir that kind of emotion and conversation, but it did.
It did. And, you know, I think that there's some things out there that are kind of, they embody the challenges that Montana's facing. And we all know that Yellowstone, the show, has been really, I heard at some point that every time a season wrapped, there was a rush on real estate in Montana, right? Yeah. So it has really shaken our communities and the culture. And it kind of, I do think that it happened alongside COVID. And so there's some things that get intermingled with, because I think people would have moved here. I mean, Yellowstone was an incentive for some, but I also think people were going to move here regardless because they wanted to get out of cities during COVID. But it really, you know, the film industry incites a lot of emotion because of how quickly Montana has changed over the last 5 years. I can't even watch Yellowstone because it's basically based on Bozeman. And I watched one episode and I was like, oh, but
I've never seen it.
Everybody was like, you have to. And so I started and I was like, I can't. But anyways, this is the thing.
I'd rather watch Landman. I'm sorry, but yeah, I'd rather watch Landman. Yeah,
for sure. But this is the thing. We have a lot of creative, hardworking Montanans Montanans here who want to work in the industry. They're visual, they're artists, they love to, they're storytellers. My brother worked in film. And the thing about this act, this media act, is actually Hollywood hates this act because it's not a Hollywood bill. It is saying if you're going to come to Montana and try to like tell stories or tell our stories, it's going to be Montanans that do it. So 60% of the credits are reserved for Montana filmmakers. So this is really an investment in an industry in Montana. And it will feed back into the Montana economy because these are good jobs. And then people can have, you know, they're working, they can have childcare, they can contribute to the economy, number one. So it's boosting the economy. The other thing is that people are going to tell Montana stories without us if we don't do this, right? So industry is already leaving Montana because this credit is running out. And they're going to Oklahoma. So you'll see shows that are supposedly Montana, but they're being filmed in Utah and Oklahoma and New Zealand and Canada. And it's like, no, if you're going to talk about Montana, film it here and use our filmmakers and use our technicians and our PAs and our grips and our, you know, storytellers. And so I think unfortunately the emotional trigger that it has, or because of Yellowstone, is why there was a lot of debate. But at the end of the day, I think if you really get down to it, most Montanans want Montanans telling our stories and getting paid for it. So I just think it was a trigger for some other really emotional topics.
I think it was, but everything that was said on that floor, I think, was relative to this debate, too. And like you said, it envelops a lot of what we've been going through over the past few years, too. So that one did get through. And I honestly, you know, when I saw, you know, Senator Greg Hertz was to pick up this one, I thought, that's good, because that guy can scrub a tax bill. You know, he can scrub a grant proposal, can he? Yeah.
Yes. He was really a good carrier for that.
Yeah. Let's talk about childcare. Okay. That's another thing that I see kind of moving forward, one step forward, two steps back, or step sideways here. There was a report out by the BBR, probably now about 3 years old, that indicated how much money it is actually costing us for inadequate child care.
Yes.
And that's defined there, too. I think that brings more conservatives to the table when we look at cheaper on the front end than the back end of these types of things. And so that ball has moved forward. Where are we at now this that's year right. with child care?
So Senator Laura Smith, who I encourage you to have on as well, has a child care trust bill that would actually create an endowment. So it's, you know, it's $150 million, but it's an endowment that, so it's not, we're not giving the money away. We're just using the investment and the returns to invest in childcare. And so that's one I think we're going to be debating maybe even today. And, you know, here's the thing. I always like to talk about the vicious cycle of childcare, which I think you're referring to, right? So parents can't afford care, then they can't work, then they earn less, and they still can't afford care, right? So it's this vicious cycle for parents. And then childcare centers can't raise their prices without losing families. Then they can't pay their staff. Then they can't serve their families well, right? And so it's kind of this, it's this vicious cycle. And you're right. I, you know, have been looking at these stats recently, and based on most recent 2023 research, employers lose $55 million annually due to absenteeism, turnover tied to childcare, and the economy as a whole loses $90 million annually.
Yeah,
and so,
and that's Main Street. Those are Main Street businesses.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's 66,000 Montana parents can't fully participate in the workforce because they don't have childcare. That's a lot of people of working age, right? We are an aging state, so if you take 66,000 people out of like the prime working age, that's a lot of that's a big portion of our you know adult population. So we really do need to do something about it if we want our economy to thrive. I mean, it really is just, this could be just an economic conversation.
Thanks for filling in today. I appreciate that. Talk about a bill that you've got on the floor, or maybe that didn't make it to the floor. That ought to.
No, I'm happy to. So I have a bill I have one for agriculture that I'm excited about, which is basically, I think it's headed to the governor's desk, so I think that one's in good shape, which is going to actually ask Montana state agencies to begin collecting data on how many Montana products they carry and use. So it's going to help Montana farmers and ranchers, because we're going to figure out, like, if we're only getting 2% of our food in the state from Montana producers, we need to do something about that. So that's just going to create, like you said, transparency and information on how, you know, Montanans only eat 3% of the food Montanans eat, only 3% is from Montana farmers and ranchers. And I don't think anybody is proud of that, right? We should be consuming and supporting our farmers and ranchers more directly here. And then I also have another one, which is going to help cover PTSD for first responders. And I don't know where that's still in the middle of the process. I don't know where that'll end up. But, you know, one of the things I've learned working in healthcare, you know, law enforcement is, and, you know, fire departments are our partners in healthcare. And I've started to, we had in West Yellowstone, which is in my district, there were 4 suicides in the last 5 years among first responders. And, you know, they see, the average Montanan or average person sees like, has like 3 to 5 traumatic events in their lives. And these first responders see like 200 to 300. And it just, it creates a brain injury, basically, which, you know, is called PTSD, but it's an actual injury. And so I'd love to get that covered, because I think with the really fast population growth and some increases in crime, like, we need them to be healthy and to be able to respond appropriately and, you know, kind of not either commit suicide or leave the workforce. So I am hoping that one gets through, because I think we do want our law enforcement and fire departments and first responders to be healthy so they can keep us safe.
That was a good debate on the floor. I think that passed second reading. Did it get past third reading? I mean, it should be a formality.
That's today.
Yep. Okay. All right.
That was the second time it was on second reading because it got amended, and both times it spurred quite a rigorous debate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which you love.
I do.
Yeah.
Yep, bring it on.
Dr. Cora Newman, State Senator, Senate District 30, thanks for coming on today. Appreciate that. And it's great to make your acquaintance. I look forward to chatting with you again.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Good luck in the rest of the session as well. Federal government looking to disband the Department of Education. You know, it hasn't been around that long, 1980, when it was created under then Democratic President Jimmy Carter. And Susie Hedlund was there in Washington, D.C., when and taking part in some of that discussion as well. And she is our superintendent of public instruction and will join us on Monday for that discussion. Do states need a federal Department of Education? We'll also get to know her a little bit better and her vision for education. Take a quick comment here. Chris in Columbia Falls. Chris, thanks for standing by. I know you've been hanging on here, and I've got a few minutes, so I thought I'd just save a few for a comment from you. Haven't heard from you in a while. Hope you're well, sir.
So, folks, if you're dismissed for a reason which makes sense, you know, if there's this kind of corruption in our country, then what's the point? What's the point if you lay these people off, or you can, it should be called layoff, or fired, or dismissed, or something, but you're not answering the questions. You see, and I've asked this question a number of times now. You can't do that. So people want to know, what's the point? If you tell someone to go home and they're no longer working for the government, or if they can work for themselves, or they can go into business for themselves, they can do that if they work for the government anyway. So come on, stop being a bunch of crybabies and understand what we're doing. We want to answer to this question.
About why people are being laid off, or what's the point? At the federal government?
What's the point? If they're gonna keep their money, keep their vacation pay, keep their retirement, and then you say, well, we dismiss you because we're doing away with this particular part of the government. We don't want you. See, so it doesn't make any sense.
Oh.
Does it make sense to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm all right with it. And I don't know. I mean, different agencies are going to have different rules regarding who and how they're employed. And how they're let go, so to speak. And I think those things are all in play here. I'm not overly...
Wouldn't you like to know why you're being fired? Don't you need just cause, especially something from the government?
Most of those programs that are being pulled back on have been funded through executive orders in the previous administration. I think there's a lot more to it than what the mainstream media covers regarding this. And the pain is on the front side. So that
they should give an explanation of it. I mean, if there's a good reason why.
Okay, here, Chris, the explanation is this. We are $31 trillion in debt. And they're discovering $4 billion a day in fraudulent expenditures from our taxpayer funds to people who don't deserve it. There you go.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.